you guys got me again tonight. Go ahead and open up your Bible, Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26, we're going to start reading from there here shortly, starting in verse 36. Before we do, just say this is it. This is the last one. The last time I'm going to be preaching before you as a trainee, anyway. And I just want to stop and take the time to say, Ruth and I have really enjoyed our time that we've been here with you guys. We love you very much, and we are sad to leave. You know, we're getting to go back home. That's not a sort of a common opportunity that people get to go back home and preach at the church where they grew up in. But we get to go back home, and that's good. But we're going to miss you guys, and we just wanted to let you know that we love you. Matthew chapter 26. I was going to say something about Troy, but I'm just going to leave that alone. Matthew chapter 26, we're going to start reading from verse 36. It says, "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' And he took with him Peter and two of the sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me.' And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not what I will, but as you will.' And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, 'So you men cannot keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.' He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done.' And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand.' While he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up, accompanied by a large crowd with swords and clubs, who came from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he who was betraying him gave them a sign, saying, 'Whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him.' Immediately Judas went to Jesus and said, 'Hail, Rabbi,' and kissed him. And Jesus said to him, 'Friend, do what you have come for.' Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and seized him." During this part of the gospel, during this part of Jesus' life, his journey to the cross enters its final stage. Here, what we saw in these verses is that Jesus is in Gethsemane, and he is arrested. Scott Powell, he just came recently from Israel, and one of the places that he probably visited was Gethsemane. I know when we were there, when we went with Scott, we visited Gethsemane. And Scott will attest to this. When you go over there, when you go to Israel, it really changes the way you read and relive these stories in Scripture. When you're walking the steps of the temple, you think to yourself, man, these could be some of the steps that Jesus himself journeyed on. When you're in Gethsemane, you realize some things in visiting those places, those types of places. Help us to see new things in these stories that we've read probably hundreds of times. An example of this is in the Garden of Gethsemane. When you visit the Garden of Gethsemane, you notice something. You notice that the temple is actually a lot closer than you think. You know, it's not like 3 or 4 miles out there. It's actually pretty close. And from the vantage point of the garden, you can see what's going on at the temple, and you can see everything in between. And while Scott and I were there, we were there with Benjamin Lee, you know him, it got us to thinking a little bit about this. And we were thinking, if Jesus is here and he's praying in the garden and Judas is bringing the temple guard and this big crowd of people from the temple, well, Jesus surely would have seen them, especially if it's at night and there's this big crowd with torches. Well, Jesus surely would have seen them. But even if Jesus doesn't physically see these people coming to arrest him, well, Jesus is God. he knows that they are coming. And that's important for us to understand. Jesus knew that the cross was gradually creeping up on him, and he makes a choice that many of us would not make. I know that he makes a choice that I would not make. If I see a bunch of people walking down the streets chanting, "We are going to kill Reuben," I am going to go the other way. I'm not sticking around. But notice with me, Jesus chose to stay. He made the choice that we likely would not have made. So in this lesson, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to look into this choice that Jesus made. And really, we're going to look into the example of the cross and the example that Jesus gives us, because there's a lot that we can learn from Jesus, and there's a lot that we can learn from the cross. We're not going to go over every lesson we can learn from Jesus' example on the cross, but we are going to look at a few. And we're going to do that through this choice that Jesus made, this choice that he made to stay. So let's start by talking about some of the things that would make his choice difficult. Jesus, he chose to stay in spite of his perfection. Now, you guys did not need me to get up here and tell you that tonight. That is not breaking news. That is not going to be the headline on the news. Jesus is perfect. We know that. We understand that. Even Pilate's wife understood this. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 19. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 19, it says, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, this is talking about Pilate, the governor, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." Here we see that Pilate's wife understands and can see, based on some reason, that Jesus was a righteous man. And her claim is amazing in the fact that it's really in contrast with the religious leaders who are there. Pilate's wife, this Gentile, can see something that the religious leaders could not see, that Jesus is righteous. See, Pilate's wife is exactly right. Jesus is perfect, and what this means is he didn't deserve what was given to him. He didn't deserve death. Rather, Jesus, he deserved life. As a matter of fact, if there's any human that ever walked on this earth that deserved life, it was him, because he was sinless. In our world, what happened to Jesus would be considered an injustice. If someone, you know, if we saw on the news or something along those lines, someone getting arrested, an innocent man getting arrested, being sent to trial, being convicted by a jury, and sentenced to death by a judge, we would look at that and say our justice system failed that person. There's no justice in that. That's an injustice. That's how we would look at that situation. That's how we would see Jesus' situation. Where in their world, it's even more amplified, because they live in this honor-shame culture where grace begets grace. If you do something good for someone, well then, you should expect good in return. That's the way their culture looked at this. Jesus had been a righteous man who had done good. Well, he should have been rewarded with good. The people in that culture really understood this. Jesus should have been praised for his actions while here on earth, but instead he was rewarded with the sentence of death. And when Jesus was in the garden, he knew what was coming for him. He knew that he was facing this sentence that lacked any form of justice, and in spite of this, he chose to stay. Well, there are some important things that we learn from this. First of all, we don't always get what we deserve. Now, not everyone in our world sees it this way. There are plenty of people who believe that if I work hard, then I should be fine. If I believe in God, then I should be happy, because people get what they deserve. And if justice is in the world, it's because God exists. On the other end of that coin, some people think that when things go wrong, it's because of something I've done. Some people believe that when justice is not present, well, that's just an indicator of God's absence. When things go wrong, either I'm the bad guy or God does not exist. And I think this mentality is the result of a culture that rarely faces adversity. I mean, we face adversity sometimes, don't we? Hurricane Harvey happened a year and a half ago, I believe, and people were suffering. People went through adversity, but that's not an everyday thing. For the most part, here in America, most of us do okay. Most of us don't have to worry about where the food is going to come from or where we're going to get our clothes from. We just don't have that problem. And the result of that type of culture is some people believe that we just deserve good all the time. Well, Jesus teaches us that we live in a world where we don't always get what we deserve. Jesus teaches us that we live in a world where innocent die for no reason. Now, some people may look at the deaths of innocent and say, well, there's no way God could exist if he allows this to happen. Now, let me just point out that Jesus was innocent, and he was put to death, a great injustice. That injustice is not proof of God's absence. Rather, I believe it's a comfort that, for believers to know that God came to earth and suffered injustice like we do at times. One of the things we learn from the cross is that we don't always get what we deserve. Another thing we learn is that it's okay if no one notices our good. Jesus did a lot of good. He did a lot of good that no one else could do. I mean, he rose people from the dead. Raise your hand. Anybody done that? That's not something that we can do. In spite of this, the religious leaders, they couldn't see it. I mean, they saw it. They knew he did it, but they couldn't really see it. All they could see was this person is stealing our power. All they could see is this person is doing stuff on the Sabbath. It's okay if no one notices our good. You know, people aren't always going to congratulate us or pat us on the back for the things that we do, and that's just fine. Jesus, he endured a sentence that he did not deserve. He chose to stay in spite of his perfection. But that's not all. Jesus chose to stay in spite of our failures. There's another headline. Breaking news for you. Humans are not perfect people. Part of being human, you know, unless you're part God like Jesus is, part of being human is making mistakes. Even Jesus' disciples made mistakes. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26, starting in verse 69. Now Peter was sitting outside the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him and said, "You too were with Jesus the Galilean." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you're talking about." When he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to him, or said to those who were there, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." And again, he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." A little later, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Surely you too are one of them, for even the way you talk gives you away." Then he began to curse and swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately a rooster crowed. And when Peter remembered the words which Jesus had said, "Before a rooster crows, you'll deny me three times," and he went out and wept bitterly. In these verses, we see a disciple of Jesus. A disciple of Jesus failing. And this wasn't just any disciple. This was Peter. And this was Peter, an apostle who's very prominent in the Gospels. Some people say that he's in Jesus' inner circle. And he failed. And the interesting thing about all this is Jesus knew it was going to happen. Jesus told Peter that he would fail. You know, if we had time to read through the Gospels, we'd realize that this is not really an isolated event. Some Gospels make it abundantly clear that Jesus' disciples failed and failed frequently. They made mistakes. My point in saying all this is that none of us deserve anything from Jesus. Even the disciples didn't deserve anything from Jesus. When Jesus was in the garden with the knowledge that his arresters were coming, he had a choice. He had a choice. He could leave or he could die for an imperfect people who don't deserve his grace. Jesus chose to stay. This is another area where our lives need to model that of the cross. You know, we live in a world where people belong to sort of groups, and the world will look at you weird if you go outside of those groups. For instance, if you are a very wealthy person, maybe you live in like a $1.5 million mansion or whatever, people are going to look at you weird if you, you know, take jogs through the hood or, you know, really, you know, rough neighborhoods, whatever you want to call it. If you're that same really wealthy person, people are going to look at you strange if you just hang out and talk it up with homeless people. You know, when I was working at Papado, there was this small little white girl who I worked with, and she lived in a rough part of town, and she would tell me stories about she'd leave work late because, you know, when you're a server, you leave work late sometimes. She'd leave work late, and on her way home, police would pull her over sometimes and ask her, you know, are you okay? You know, are you lost? Do you know where you're going? And she would have to explain, well, no, I just live here. I live in this neighborhood because the police saw something wrong. She didn't necessarily belong, or in their mind, she didn't necessarily belong where she was going. It was like a very wealthy person hanging out with the homeless. Let me just point out that Jesus did not think this way. Spiritually speaking, Jesus was a very wealthy person hanging out with the spiritually homeless. We need to break down these artificial barriers that separate people, because that's how we reach the lost. That's what Jesus did in the Gospels. People would complain, why is he eating with these specific people? Well, because he's trying to reach the lost. That's how we do it. Another way we can mirror Jesus' example on the cross is by showing grace to others, even when they don't deserve it. You know, I said it earlier, and I'll probably say it a couple more times in this lesson, but we don't deserve anything from Jesus. You know, sometimes we live lives in such a way where we ask ourselves, why should I help this person? What have they done for me? They haven't done anything for me. As a matter of fact, the other day, they insulted me or they harmed me in some way. Why should I help this person? What if Jesus asked those questions? What if Jesus asked, why should I help this people who've constantly been unfaithful to you? Why should I help this people? That's not what Jesus says. See, Jesus shows grace even when we didn't deserve it. He chose to stay in spite of our failures. But the question is why? Why did Jesus choose to stay even though he was perfect and didn't deserve what he received? Why did he choose to stay even though we have our failures? Jesus chose to stay because of his love. And this is essentially the why. Jesus didn't have to go through the cross. He was perfect. We didn't deserve his grace. He did it because he loved us and because he loved God. And really what Jesus does through the cross is he shows us what love truly is. Love is putting others before self. So we can see evidently that Jesus loved God. He put God before self. We see that in his prayers while he's in the garden. Not my will, but yours be done. Put God before self. He loved God. And putting others before self. He put us before his well-being. You know, this is evident in parables like the Good Samaritan. You guys know the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus says the greatest commandments are love God and love your neighbor. And the man asks, well, who's my neighbor? So he tells him this parable of the Good Samaritan man who's beaten and robbed, and these religious leaders, they just pass him by. They don't care. But this Samaritan, this Good Samaritan, showed love in that he put this man above himself. He used his time to help this man. He took money out of his pocket to help this man. The Good Samaritan, he understands what love truly is. If Jesus was like the religious leaders who just passed the beaten man by, seeking what was best for him, then he wouldn't have chosen the cross. Instead, we see that Jesus, he did indeed choose to stay. You know, through his example, Jesus teaches us what love is. He teaches us that love is not selfish. And that's an important lesson, I think, for us to understand, because many people in our world, in our culture, don't really know what love truly is. Love is a selfish thing for a lot of people in our culture. You know, I really enjoy being in this person's company, and that's what love is. Or, you know, I really like the way this person makes me feel, and that is what love is. You know, you got to think, is this why marriages fail in our country? When a marriage no longer fulfills my wants and my desires, then I bail. When my spouse no longer makes me happy, then I bail. When I'm no longer getting anything out of it, then I bail. That's just a sort of a general trend we see in our world. If I don't get what I want, then I could just go somewhere else. I mean, you could sort of look along Louetta and look at all the restaurants, and if this restaurant doesn't have what you want, you just go somewhere else. If I can't get what I want at McDonald's, then I can go to Burger King. If I can't get what I want at Burger King, then I can go to Chick-fil-A, who is bound to have what I want because Chick-fil-A is perfect. You know, it's sad to think about that sort of mentality and think that that mentality enters the church at times. You know, there are times where an individual will leave a church because they don't get what they want. You know, maybe an individual goes to the elders with this great idea, and the elders in their wisdom realizes that it's not such a great idea, so they tell the person, well, not right now. So they go and they find a church where they're going to get what they want. Well, if the cross teaches us anything, it teaches us that brotherly love is not this way. Brotherly love is selfish. You know, if we are truly a family of God that love one another, then we understand that we're not always going to get our way, even when it comes to the assembly. I may have to give up my wants or needs for my brothers and sisters in Christ, and that's the example we see from Jesus on the cross. We also see that example from Paul, Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9 and verse 3, in that context, Paul is referring to some of the Israelites, Romans chapter 9 and verse 3, some of the Israelites who haven't accepted the truth of Christ. And he makes a profound statement in this verse. Romans chapter 9 and verse 3, he says, "For I could wish that I myself were accursed, separated from Christ for the sake of my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh." What's Paul saying here about these Jews? He's saying, I wish that I was separated from Christ so that they could have salvation. Oh man, what an amazing statement that is. You know, I don't know if I'm on the same wavelength with Paul just yet on that, but that is the type of love that we need to aspire to have for one another. Paul here says he's willing to give up his salvation for his brethren. Isn't that amazing? This is the type of love that Jesus showed for us on the cross. He chose to stay because he had love for God and he had love for us. The example of the cross teaches us, at least I think, teaches us some important lessons. We don't always get what we deserve. We need to show grace to others even when they don't deserve it. And it shows us what love truly is. Putting others and putting God before self. When Jesus, whenever he was in the garden, he knew what was coming for him. And he chose to stay. And because of this, he gave salvation to his people. Well, maybe there is someone here tonight who wants to be a part of that people, who wants to be a part of the people who has salvation through Jesus' death. Well, if that sounds like you, then we can help you out. Maybe there's someone here tonight who's left the Lord, who's left the Lord, who's been putting self over God, but you want to come back to the Lord. Well, we can help you with that also. Whatever you need, come now as we stand and as we sing.